Hi, this is Craig Ballantyne, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show. Welcome, everybody. Today, you're going to find out about an embarrassed cardiologist. That's right. And a cardiologist who was so embarrassed that he went and started a multi-million dollar real estate investing business. All right. You're going to love meeting my friend, Dr. Vikram Rea. We're going to jump into it, and he's going to also make you super healthy and super wealthy. Let's get into the conversation. Dr. Vikram, welcome to the show.
Hey, Craig. Super pumped to be here, man.
Now, this is going to be a lot of fun. So, I mean, holy cow, people are super excited to know, how the heck did you retire as a cardiologist and become a real estate investor? Like, how does that even happen? Especially like, you look like you're Doogie Howser, man. You would have been a cardiologist for like 2 years.
Yeah. There's this quote that still I live by to this day. You know, it's your dreams don't always end up being your destiny. And you know what? You're the one who actually, you know, lives that the most. I mean, you started your career as a trainer, and now you're like this like high profile coach for entrepreneurs all over the world. So it's interesting how life throws its twists and turns. But what happened really was, you know, I started my career as like, you know, I was never the smartest guy in the room, but I definitely had the most hustle in the room. And I worked my tail off. In our Indian culture, you have three options. Either you're, you know, a doctor, you're an engineer, or you're a loser, you know? So my mom always wanted me to be a doctor. She's like, so like fretting, you know, and then finally I got in, and then she's like, literally that was like probably the highlight of her life. And so she was overjoyed, and I was like, all right, wow. Cool. This seems interesting. You know, let me go in. But it was in the middle of my medical school where I actually got the passion for it. It wasn't like early on, but it ignited because I had six people in my family over the next 4 years die of heart attacks.
Wow.
And I was like, oh crap, I need to, I need to study this further. I need to see what's going on, not only to help my own family, but I mean, before COVID, this was literally the number one killer in the world. I mean, wow. Heart disease. And so we have to do something about it. So I studied and ended up, you know, going to Georgetown, and then made my way to Milwaukee for my cardiology fellowship. And,
oh wow,
you know, it was tough. Like cardiology is one of the most competitive and difficult specialties to get into. But I was like, you know what? Go boom, boom, boom. First time around, didn't get in, and I was crushed. And I was like, should I leave? Should I quit? Should I reconsider? But then that was like for a day, and I was like, no, let's go back in. So, you know, double down, and then got all the interviews I wanted and ended up matching where I wanted to go. And it was awesome. So I was like, all right, eureka. My life is done. I just follow this clean set path, no veering or turning, no detours. But what happened was, Craig, I noticed that all the people who were mentoring me, doctors who are already practicing, who are already what we call attendings and professional doctors, they're working their tail off like 60, 70, 80 hours a week. And they're not just doing it for a few years. That's their life. And
then
like,
they have heart attacks.
Exactly. It's funny you say that. When I was practicing, when I finally, you know, ended up practicing in DC, one of my partners, senior partners, he ended up having a heart attack while he was performing a procedure to save someone else for their heart attack.
Wow.
That's so I was crazy. Like, man, I'm like, this is nuts, man. Like, I know personal trainers are healthier than this, right? So I was like, there's got to be a better way. So I made a promise to myself that if I'm still practicing, and I was like about 32, 33 at the time. And I was like, my wife thought I was crazy. She didn't know where this came from. But I was like, babe, if I'm still practicing by the age of 40, something went terribly wrong.
Wow.
And so I just declared it. I had no clue. I had no idea. And so, you know, once you declare something, what happens is that your subconscious mind starts thinking of ways to try to make that happen. So yeah. I was like, all right, I read the book that sort of has launched everyone's discontent in life, for financial freedom, rich dad, poor dad. Yeah. Right. And then it was not until his second book, which was Cashflow Quadrant, which really started, you know, jogging the gears in my head.
Yeah.
You know, is there a better way? And so I hired an options coach while I was still training to learn options trading and fall flat on my face. I'm like, dude,
yeah, that stuff's not easy.
I was like, I don't even understand this stuff, man. And so at that point I was like, all right, let me just graduate. Let me start practicing and let's sort of revisit this. And so, you know, we all moved back to DC and we're like, all right, let's go. And I thought, hey, real estate makes sense. And why? I studied, I'm a guy who loves history, mythology, culture. And I was like, for the last 5,000 years, this is the most powerful wealth creation vehicle on the planet.
Yeah.
So that's how I started thinking about real estate at that point.
That's fantastic, man. I love it. Now, if we go back in time, what was, like, where did you grow up and what was your upbringing? And obviously you were supposed to be a doctor or engineer, but, you know, what secretly did you want to be when you grew up?
Dude, I wanted to be a race car driver. I wanted to be like, sort of like the, you know, like a super athlete. I wanted to, I don't know, be on stage and like, just like, you know, sort of magnetize the crowd in a way. And it's interesting because things are starting to become full circle. I mean, things that I always wanted to do are, I love reading too. I love reading and I love like, you know, I've become a coach in the last, I guess, last couple of years, but you know, I have friends telling me, man, you've been coaching me for like 10 years and I didn't even ask you to do so. Yeah. So it's like, it's interesting. Like your natural inclinations start to come out, you know, once you give them the space. And now that I'm not supposed to be a doctor and I can do technically whatever I want, I've been gravitating to sort of three different categories, Craig. Mm-hmm. I love health and human optimization and biohacking. And I've created a whole clinic around that. I love just finding people and figuring out, you know, what's their 2 millimeter shift? What's the one thing that if they did that, everything else would be, you know, big game changer for them. And I've been doing that for a lot of physicians, to be honest with you. And it all started because people started reaching out to me during COVID. And then finally, you know, with the real estate, it was sort of a side hustle I just did because I wanted to create other streams of income for my medical practice. And now that's sort of blown up. And my rule of thumb is this, Craig, when your side hustle eclipses your main income, you got to reconsider your path.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, I know that because that's what I had when I was a personal trainer, right? Like all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, but after a lot of hard work, the online business was making more than personal training, which was the goal. So recently, just on the weekend down in Atlanta, you had a seminar with, you know, a couple hundred of attendees in the real estate investment world, some online and some in person. Like, what the heck were you teaching folks down there? Who is attending? And what kind of results have your clients gotten in the real estate investing world? Like, what, like, is a real estate investing single house, multifamily, that sort of stuff?
Yeah. So I myself thought the way to do this, because, you know, real estate, the only thing you're limited by is really your mindset, because the money's out there, the resources are out there, the deals are out there, and the partners are out there, but it's up here, right? And so I had to overcome that. So, you know, I'll just quickly give you a soundbite on my own journey and why now it makes sense for me to like try to up level others. And so I thought, okay, let me just start with single family homes. So even though I was in DC practicing full time, I was like, there's no way I can do this in DC. First, the homes are too darn expensive. And so I partnered up with my dad in 2012. We started buying these little single family homes. We eventually built up a portfolio of 30 homes and got like a, you know, this nice little income. But I was like, is there another level? Is there a bigger way? And I learned about multifamily syndication, which initially I thought was some kind of illegal process. I mean, it sounded like, you know, something abstract, but really it's just pooling investor money together to buy these larger assets and bringing in a professional team to manage them. And I was like, all right. And, you know, initially we were too scared to do it on ourselves and we didn't have the knowledge. So we partnered with other people doing this and joint ventured. Then we started doing it on our own. And now, Craig, that was in 2015 when we started Viking Capital, our company. And now it's 2021, six and a half, almost 7 years later. And we have $600 million of transactions. We have, you know, almost 3,400 doors. And yeah, we're off to the races. And now again, people are like, hey, how did you do this? Can you help me out? And we didn't want to like do a conference or coaching or any of that. It was just people kept on asking and we're like, all right, you know what? Let's pay it forward. You know, someone helped us get to where we are. Let's do this. And so that was the impetus for the conference. And it was like, it was called Multifamily Immersion Live. And we had all these attendees from all over the United States and even internationally come. And what we taught them, Craig, was, you know, you, first of all, it is psychology. You guys can do this. It's how, right? And so we talked to them about like becoming a time architect, carving out more time, which you've been so eloquently teaching people all over the country and all over the world. Then it's like, okay, here's who you need on your team. Here's how you raise capital. And here's how you structure all together. And here's how you rinse and repeat and grow and scale the business. And literally we open up our kimono. I mean, we didn't have to do this, but literally we showed them, hey, look, this is how we built our company. Here's the mistakes we did. Here's the success that we got. And here's what we would do differently if we had to do it again. And here you go, guys. Now take action. I even borrowed your 90-day action plan. I reconfigured it for real estate.
Oh,
and
beautiful.
I gave it to all the guests and saying, hey, look, take action and don't be all those guys who attend all these like conferences and don't do anything Monday morning.
Right. Exactly. Okay. So let's break this down because I know people are listening to this and going, whoa, you just blew my mind with all of, you know, multifamily syndication. Like, what the heck? Where did you start with your first couple of deals? And what were some of the mistakes that you made that we don't want to make?
Absolutely. And I think you had a guest recently on your podcast that also said this, but, you know, doing bigger deals, it's all about just having a bigger mindset, really. And so the amount of energy and time I did for my first home, which was $26,000, and the amount of energy I did for this, this $400 unit, $76 million deal, it's not too much different. All I did was really, and I'll start with my first deal, which was, I think it was about a $5 million deal. It was 118 units and it was in the south part of Atlanta. And the key number one is all in the multifamily game, it's all controlled by brokers. And, you know, you can try to do like emails to sellers. You can try to, find listings somewhere randomly. But in this multifamily industry, brokers control both, you know, the deals. They get the deals from these sellers and then they send it out to their list, if you will. And so you want to definitely be on their like good side. You want to be well known to them. And so you want to have at least, you know, one broker. The phrase goes this, Craig: one broker can make you, you know, rich. Two brokers can retire you for life. Three brokers will create generational wealth. If you have, if you know, like, and trust them, they know, like, and trust you.
Wow. That's amazing. So what the heck does it look like to go and raise money for a deal that's $5 million, $10 million, $20 million. Like, how much money is needed for the down payment? And generally, like, when you do the syndications, how many investors do you tend to get?
Yeah, great question, Craig. So our first deal was a, that 118 unit deal ended up being 5 million. So we had to raise about between $1 and $1.5 million of money. And for us at that time, we're like, can we do it? I don't know. Like, it seems like a lot larger amount. But then, you know, it's all about like breaking it down to the basics. So, you know, usually people invest in 50 or 100K chunks. And usually they're typically what we call accredited investors. That what that means is you're making, you know, 200K a year as a single or 300K as a couple, or maybe you have a net worth of $1 million outside of your home. And you people are surprised. Hey, is there a lot of those kind of people around? And absolutely there are. They just don't advertise, right? Yeah. They don't tell people that they are. So a lot of people who are earning six figures, they just don't know what to do with their money. And if you present them this kind of opportunity, and to be honest with you, our first presentation deck was, if I look at it now, it's the ugliest thing I've ever seen. I mean, it was like a PowerPoint, like, you know, just scrambled together. But we had already done three deals as a joint venture. We knew what we were talking about. We just, you know, needed our first big break. And so at the beginning, it's a lot of friends and family, right? Those are the people who, you know what, they're going to give you a shot. Yeah. And essentially ended up becoming about 15 investors, each investor putting in about 100K. So that ended up being the 1.5 million we needed. And we put a little bit of our own money in just to show that, you know, we got some skin in the game. Yeah. And we ended up doing it. And then really we were relying on this property management company to really help us run the asset, and ended up being a phenomenal success. And then the deal next door was a vacant deal, and we didn't want to buy it, but it was just a pain in the butt because it was an eyesore. There was like no one there, and it was like caused there's a lot of crime, and we were concerned that it's going to infringe it upon our deal. So
yeah,
we had to essentially scrape together a bunch of money because it was too risky to put investors into it, and so we just borrowed some money, and we ended up buying that deal, and we ended up combining the two together, and it ended up being close to 200 units, and we sold it, and we bought that one for about $3 million. And so together it was about $8 million, and we ended up selling it about 24 months later, the whole package, for $13 million. And we got our investors a phenomenal return. We got to cash out nicely, and that's when the real estate bug hit, and then we've been off to the races ever since.
So were you living in Atlanta then?
No, that's the interesting thing. I was working full time, 60 to 70 hours a week as a cardiologist up in DC, in Northern Virginia. So, I mean, I'm working full time. My partner, who's and you know, multifamily is a team sport, Craig. So, gotta always have partners. Otherwise, it's tough. And you know, he was a hospitalist, meaning he worked at the hospital in the inpatient setting. And so, we're two, you know, doctors working full time. We got both kids. Our wives, you know, are working, and we're trying to pull this off on the side. And that's sort of what you got to do sometimes: bootstrap the whole thing together. And
yeah.
You know, hustle it out until you feel like you can start hiring folks.
Yeah. And so at that time, you're just connecting with all the brokers that you possibly can. And then the broker brought you the deal in Atlanta.
That broker I've been trying to talk to for almost 2 years now. And, you know, he usually throws me his worst deals, and I would explain to him, no, that doesn't make sense. Here's why. And I'd drop down, I'd take him out to dinner, wine and dine him. We talk some more. He'd throw me some more deals. Now they're not as so bad. They're like a little bit better, but they're still crappy. And then, you know, he's almost like he's testing you, right? How bad do you want it? And finally, you know, this deal came across, and we went for it, and we actually lost the deal, Craig. And then it ended up going to this more established group out of New York. And what happened was, right before closing, someone got murdered on the property.
Oh, wow.
And they basically backed out. They're like, oh, this is too intense. We were like, they presented the deal to us as we were the backup. We were like, I don't know, this is a little pretty dicey. But what we did was we did our research. Look, we could just react with emotion to the situation and move away and we're done. Or we doubled down and look at the intelligence and analysis. And so we called the police department. We called the city. We talked to the property management companies. We looked at all the other data in the area, and we realized it was just a random event, and there's no organized or trend of crime. And in fact, it was actually on the way down. And so we made a educated, rational, you know, sort of guess, and it was a risk, but we did it, and man, did it pay off.
Got it. Perfect. Perfect. Absolutely amazing. Now, you didn't do any single family homes, right? Like, aside from your own.
I did like a couple of our own. Me and my father got up to about 30, and then we like, you know what, this is great, but it's not going to retire us. It was a lot of work. You know, you're getting a couple hundred bucks a month, maybe $1,000 here and there. It was starting to, you know, but it was difficult because it was harder to get money for these small deals than the bank trying to give me money for a larger deal. The larger deal, the bank looked at the deal itself and they didn't care about me as much. And, you know, So that's the cool thing about commercial real estate. It's so much easier to do bigger projects if you have a team and sort of a structure in place.
So for the commercial broker, is it kind of like a broker's world? You know, it's like, hey, so these brokers, I don't know how they get these deals, but they're kind of like, once they're an established broker, they probably get good deals. They probably get bad deals too. And then you guys are just kind of wine and dining them. Or does it ever flip?
Yes, when you become a seller, it flips, right? Now they're like, oh yeah, we'll do anything you want to get the listing, right? Okay. But what happened is, yes, the broker, like in single family, when you're trying to buy a home just for yourself, there's two brokers. There's like a buying broker and a selling broker. Here, there just happens to be one broker and they represent both sides. So it's a very interesting dynamic.
So you go back to what you mentioned before, all the way in schooling, you just outworked everybody. What were the success routines you had along the way as a single young guy in college and university and medical school? And then what were some of the routines you started using as a cardiologist with two kids and a great marriage and, you know, you taking care of yourself? Like, what the heck is still, are you still using, and what the heck have, has evolved over time with your routines?
Yeah. Growing up, I mean, no one really taught me a lot of this stuff. You know, I didn't even know how to study, man. Like half the time, like I thought I was reading the books, but like, was I really absorbing the material, you know? And, you know, it just steadily improved. And I would say, you know, Craig, you've seen this too. Most people, they peak in college. Maybe they peak at their first or second job and then they're done. Right. Huh. I would say it's the top 5% of the world who keeps, you know, getting better decade after decade or week, you know, month after month. And I wanted to be in that thing, that area. So, there was a point in my life where my life was not going the right way. I was in sixth grade and I was sort of not paying attention, not studying well. And, in fact, it eclipsed where I was in band camp and this kid was making fun of me and I had a bad temper, when I was younger, and he was drawing pictures and passing around the classroom. And I just got so angry. I took a trumpet and I hit him on the head with a trumpet. And at that point, I got suspended from school. And then at that, my mom thought, man, this kid is, he's not going to amount to anything. And, you know, she was crying. She was trying to plead with the principal. And I don't know, something clicked after that year. I was like, you know what? I just got to turn around. I'm meant for something better. And, you know, I hustled, I studied hard, but I was still playing at, you know, like if you had a car, gear 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, 5 is like the highest gear possible. I went from maybe gear 1 to gear 2 to maybe gear 3. And I stayed at gear 3 even in high school. I did well enough to get to a good school. I went, got into medical school, but it was not until I started practicing and had my own family that I found my why. I'm like, dude, I want to give my kids legacy. I want to give my kids something, you know, the experiences that I've never had. I also want to, you know, my parents always used to fight about money, Craig, and it created a lot of stress in our household.
Sure.
And I wanted to make sure that never happened to me. And, you know, I know a lot of doctors and they appear rich, but they're still paycheck to paycheck. They're still broke. They still have a ton of student debt. And I just wanted to create freedom. And that word freedom started resonating. And so I came up with the concept of what I call the five freedoms, where I wanted to have, not only financial freedom, which I'm sure everyone is striving for, but I wanted to have time freedom. I wanted to be able to own my own time and do whatever I wanted. I also wanted to be able to work from anywhere in the world, location freedom. I also wanted to have ultimate vitality or freedom from disease. And then I wanted to have like an unshakable mindset. If someone dies on me, my business sucks. If the IRS comes after me, you know, no matter what happens, I just want to have a resilient and like sort of a fortitude to withstand everything and still be centered. And that's sort of what's been guiding me the last 5 to 7 years.
All right. That's amazing. And I know that you coach people on the five freedoms. So let's tell us a little bit more about who you coach and how you help people with this. And then I want to dig into that last one, you know, that mindset of when the worst thing in the world happens to you that, you know, you don't fold, some people fall into a deep depression and, you know, on one hand, it's like kind of understandable, but on the other hand, it's like life does have to go on. So who are you coaching? And then kind of give us a little bit of the behind the scenes on that fifth freedom, that mental freedom principle.
Yeah. It really started during COVID, Craig. Like, I was running my clinic, called the Vitality Institute, and I was helping people in functional medicine. So I got trained after cardiology. I was like, all right, I want to go deeper with helping people. And I'm like, all right, let's treat root cause of disease. And so I studied this and I was like, all right, great. But I was working literally like a full day, full-time job in the clinic, was running the real estate company. And then this COVID happens and literally the whole world is like on reset. And I was asked to do this podcast or this online summit, and it was geared toward physicians. And so I just told my story and I told them what, you know, what's going on and what I've been able to achieve and sort of my belief systems. And apparently it resonated. And I started getting inundated with like phone calls, emails, appointments. Hey, come talk to me, or I want to be on your, you know, all this stuff. And it was all physicians looking to pivot out of medicine or looking to play a bigger game in medicine. And it was essentially like sort of by accident, I sort of created a coaching program because of the demand out there. And so now I coach physicians or sort of high performers or entrepreneurs in basically life and success and really learning to, you know, achieve these five freedoms, become legendary, become limitless. And that's why I named my company Limitless MD.
Mm-hmm. And so what do you see? Like, you know, someone's able to become a doctor, they, you know, they clearly have a success mindset, but what do you see are some of the biggest obstacles even within these high performers, and maybe not just doctors, but in all the people that you work with? Like, where do we get hung up on ourselves?
I think it's scarcity. A lot of people live in scarcity. It's so funny. Like, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine, and they're very successful people, and, you know, multiple millions in the bank, you know, doing so well, multiple clinics. But even these people are like, oh man, like, look at that person, look at that person, the FOMO, the like, oh
yeah.
And the thing is, they work like, you know, they work 80, 90 hours a week. They work like dogs. And it's, that's how they can balance all the plates. And no one has figured out how to, you know, the whole concept of becoming an owner and not an operator, and learning to create systems and scale. And that lexicon is not in a physician or to most people's, you know, vocabulary. And first, my main thought is, how do we shift people from sort of this scarcity mindset to more of an abundance mindset? And then how do we create the end game, and then reverse engineer that so they can actually achieve that? And so people have to sort of step out of the comfort zone. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess for like most people who are a doctor, it's just like, oh, I'll take on more patients, I will do more surgeries, I will work longer hours. Like, there is no escape from that. It's like, how am I going to make more money? This is all I do, is kind of the average thinking around that. Right.
Yes. And they're just trying to serve themselves and their families, right?
Yeah.
And their why is pretty weak, and hence their drive is pretty weak. Or, you know, their drive is just enough to be comfortable. And comfort kills, I think, because anyone who's trying to be legendary or trying to like leave an impact or a dent in the universe can't be comfortable. Like, I'm nervous pretty much every other week doing something that I haven't done before. It's crazy.
Well, you tapped into your big why when you were like, I want to leave my kids wealth. And maybe that was driving you from, you know, when your parents didn't have wealth. How did you use that to get, you know, first of all, to get fired up? That's kind of the easy part. But how did you use that on a dark day?
Yeah. Yeah. If it's just about the money, you're going to get burnt out, and you're going to turn off the engines. But, you know, I've been consistently scrambling my jets and ready to launch, you know, for a decade. I'm like you. I really believe in getting up early, and that 4:45 a.m. is like my holy time. And you know, one of the cool things I've learned after reading your books is really like how to utilize that morning routine even more. So, you know, incorporating the magic time before I do my morning routine has been game changer these last 6 months. So thank you for that. But it's really, I've learned to play and operate in my zone of genius. And what I've done is I've learned to delegate, outsource, delete. And what I've done is things that are going well, I've shifted from things that are not. So, you know, Joe Polish teaches elf and half. Mm-hmm. So I really believe in elf, easy, lucrative, and fun. So if you find something that isn't that, that's probably in your zone of genius, you're probably doing what Stephen Coulter says, flow state, and you're really just going for it. And it's effortless, and it's going to not only impact yourself, it's going to give you income, but it's going to probably impact and help others, people's lives. So it's like a win, 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 win. And people need to stop doing things that are making them frustrated or that are hard and annoying. So that shift has to happen. And so, and also I think people chase too many things, right? And me and you've talked about this before, right? People are chasing like 7 different things. While if they only did 2 of them, they'd have tremendous amount of success.
So you mentioned that you do the magic time before your morning routine. Everybody wants to know what people do in their morning routine. So what do you do, considering that vitology, like living a great life, a vital life, is so important to you?
Yeah. So I've been studying, you know, both functional medicine, biohacking, human supplementation. And the goal is essentially, I want to take great people and make them extraordinary. And first, I got to start with myself. So this year has been a huge transformational year for me. I took my body from about 185 pounds, where I was like, about, I don't know, 15% body fat. I thought I was okay, healthy. And I took myself to like you know, 7% body fat, got a six pack. And now the goal is performance and energy and also just being able to take myself to that ultimate health. And so now I'm working my way. I've added about 10 pounds of lean muscle. I do Muay Thai kickboxing. I take a line of supplements that I recommend, including Athletic Greens, which is what I start my morning with. I do psyllium husk to help with lowering insulin. It also helps with your digestive system. I take what I call the core four. So I take probiotics, I take fish oil, probiotics, vitamin D, and a strong men's multivitamin that my clinic produces. So I take all these things. On top of that, 3 to 4 liters of water a day consistently. And I do meditation, and I've done a couple of different, I probably have explored 7 or 8 different versions of meditation, but what I found works, I guess, best, and I wouldn't know if it's truly meditation, but it's essentially adrenal reset. So what I'm doing is something called NUCALM, NUCALM, and it's using bioacoustic software that has like a deep binaural beats on top of a disc that stimulates GABA, which is a neurotransmitter in your body that calms you down and stimulates parasympathetic release. And on top of that, you have like an eye mask. And if you do all three, you literally can drop into Delta, which is your sleep state, and get a restorative a boost. And, you know, that's been a huge game changer for me.
That's amazing. Amazing. So flip it now and go, you know, because again, some men are thinking, oh, I've never heard of 90% of these things. And I know that I'm doing so much stuff wrong. If you were to like give a core 3 to 5 changes that every, you know, kind of stereotypical overworked, maybe a little bit overweight, unhealthy entrepreneur should make, like, what are the changes that would be fundamentally simple to make that would have the greatest leverage?
Yes. I would say start with the foundation, start with the basics, right? If you're vegetarian, then eat a higher protein vegetarian diet and eat a ton more vegetables. But if you eat meat, I would say a meat vegetable diet, sort of paleo-esque, is probably a reasonable diet to follow. And then on top of that, like really phase out most drinks except for water. And I would go 3 to 4 liters a day, which I think is probably not normal for most folks. And then I would say the core four I talked about, 4 simple supplements that most people should be taking, the vitamin D, the probiotic, the fish oil, and the men's multi or the women's multi. And I think that's it. And then sleep, you know, work on sleep optimization. And I know you teach the 10-3-2-1-0 formula, which is great. And it's really getting quality sleep. And if you know, there's all these cool gadgets out there to measure sleep. And, you know, I use an Oura Ring, and there's a Whoop device. Yeah. And there's a lot of the beds, even check it out. I'm sure the iOS does. Apple does it too. So it doesn't matter. Just make sure you're getting good sleep and good quality sleep. If not, you know, correct it. And there's a really good book by Sean Stevenson called Sleep Smarter, I believe, or Sleep Better.
Smarter, because he has Eat Smarter, Sleep Smarter. And I think there's one other one.
Yeah. So, you know, so if I had to reiterate, it's I would say strength training, sleep, water, supplements, a green drink, and maybe, you know, movement.
Great. That's fantastic. Yeah. And, you know, like most people, you know, if you are struggling with all of them, focus on one and improve along the way. Now, one thing that I must ask you about is, you go back to that joke that you told earlier that, you know, you're either a scientist, a doctor, an engineer, or a loser. And, you know, it's a good joke, but there must've been some doubters along the way. Maybe people, maybe not within your family because they wanted you to be a doctor so bad, but how did you deal with doctors in the medical side of things? And then how did you deal with the transition? Like, was your family scared for you? Was your family skeptical? Was your family against your decision to leave the cardiology and go into real estate? But just overall, how did you deal with people's thoughts on the outside?
Yeah. You know, this is not a normal path. And, you know, I really didn't have someone I could really reach out and say, oh man, this guy did it, let me follow him. And so I sort of had to blaze my own trail a little bit on this. And the thing is, it's people make you feel guilty. Oh, you studied you know, 24 years to become a cardiologist. Are you really ready to, you know, leave, give it all away? And no, I had a great time. For 10 years, I really served my patients and, you know, helped so many people. And during that time, I was evolving as a cardiologist. And I really think the place where I want to take my health is, it's the next evolution, right? People go to their physician and they get minimal information and they're said, oh, you're okay. Check, they click the box and they're sent home. I'm taking them from, you say you feel okay, but you don't have energy for your kids. You have this weight that you're carrying around. You don't know what to do with it. And you're worried about the disease your mom and dad have. And you're worrying if you're going to get them next.
Yeah.
And, you know, and all the imbalances that you're feeling, your hormones are off. Like, let's take all that and let's start working on it, you know, step by step. And I just feel like the cardiology was my foundation. And, you know, in real estate, it's because I'm a cardiologist that I've been able to attract, I've raised about $100 million of capital, Craig, since we started our company. And it's because I think people trust me because I'm a doctor and I've done the rigorous training of doctors and I understand the pains of being a doctor and the financial limitations and the golden handcuffs, they call them. And I've broken free and I'm helping other people do the same. And so it's almost leveraging what I've done versus, shying away from it. Initially, I didn't tell people I'm a doctor because I thought it was embarrassing, but I've actually doubled down.
I'm embarrassed to be a cardiologist. I haven't heard that one before.
But in the real estate world, I thought they would not take me seriously, you know?
Got it, man. Yeah, no, that does make total sense. So what about on the anti-aging part? Like, you know, you're clearly doing things to optimize your health. In terms of anti-aging, what do you see? There's so many things out there. What do you see as like, these are legit treatments if you want to help turn back time in addition to the other things that you've already talked about? What are some of the things that you have done or are considering or would recommend, kind of give a thumbs up approach to? And again, this is not medical advice, dear internet lawyers. This is just like, just a couple guys having a conversation.
This is a chat. Guys. Yeah. I think number one is you got to figure out where you are. So if you haven't done truly in-depth blood work, like a functional a panel, that might be good. I would look at like some really cool markers. HSCRP is a marker for inflammation. Most doctors do not check that at all. Fasting insulin is a great marker. It really tells you, what's going on with your hormones and your sensitivities. I would look at testosterone, all these things as a guy. Cortisol is a great hormone marker that just to see, what's going on with your health. There's more and more testings to see like what's your true age and your biological age, mm-hmm. right? And based on your biological age, you can really see what's going on with your health. When you push yourself on a treadmill, there's something called peak VO2. Peak VO2 will really tell you your cardiac and anaerobic capacity. And I used to use peak VO2 to determine if my patients needed a heart transplant if they dropped so low. Now I'm using it on the other end to see, hey, look, let's see if what we're doing is really taking your health to that next level. And if it improves your peak VO2, it's improving your overall, lifespan. I'm using HRV, heart rate variability. And the way I look at that, and I know a lot of your guests have spoken about that in the past. It's really saying, look, heart rate variability, your heart rate should vary beat to beat. And that's normal. And that means you have less sympathetic drive and more parasympathetic drive, which is more your rest and relaxation push. Now, if your HRV starts going up, then whatever interventions you're doing, supplements, sleep, stress, all that, that's a good sign. So, these are some of the markers I'm looking at.
So when you tell people to go and get that blood work done and they made a note of everything that you suggested, what do they do? Do they get the blood work done by a specialist who can interpret this? Do they take it to their doctor? Do they just look at the numbers themselves and go on the internet? Or like, who should they consult with at this point?
Yeah, I think a functional medicine specialist, there's a lot of them out there. Mm-hmm. They can usually help guide you and start work on, root cause of what's going on. And that's the number one assessment. Next, when you're talking about longevity, something I'm looking into in the future is maybe peptides. I've heard, neuropeptides and peptide treatments are something that some of the top-notch anti-aging folks are starting to use. And so it can really help enhance your energy, your immune system, your hormonal regulation. And it really is what some people are considering elixir for, the fountain of youth.
Amazing. Amazing, man. We could go so deep on that. So one thing I want to ask you about is your nighttime routine, because we all know that the morning routine is important, but if you have a horrible nighttime routine, it's tough to have that morning routine. So what helps you unwind and relax, because you have so much going on?
You know, I try to turn off by about seven o'clock for sure. Five to six is the ideal, but seven is the absolute latest. Mm-hmm. Technology, you know, I don't know who it was that was sharing with me a story where they put their phone to sleep, you know,
yeah.
bedtime routine. And
that's in my book, In the Perfect Week Formula. Yeah, we talk about the phone bed.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that because I really think we're addicted, and not only your phone, but I take my Apple Watch off and all that kind of stuff. And then I have these glasses I got that are red tinted, and they help sort of induce a melatonin release. I use lavender essential oils on my wrist, and that helps with promoting.
Do you put those on just before sleep?
Yes, before sleep, I just rub it on my wrist.
Yep.
I also, if I'm traveling in a hotel room or we're all in together, I use sort of white noise that helps me sleep. And then I keep the temperature pretty cool, between 68 to 70 degrees. My wife doesn't like it, but it is what it is, and really helps all of us. And sometimes I read a book, and usually by page three of the book, I'm out. So that usually helps sort of prime me for sleeping.
Perfect. That's absolutely fantastic. What are some of the books? I know you talked about the cash flow quadrant, but you know, just one of the last questions I wanted to ask you is, what are some of the books that have influenced you, educated you, that maybe, you know, people listening to this who are like, yeah, I'm in, but I'd love to learn a little bit more about the foundations of it. What are some of the books on the real estate side? And then what are some of your just favorite books on the personal development side that have helped you the most over these years?
Yeah, you know, I'm a big Robin Sharma fan. I like a lot of his books, and he has a new book called The Everyday Hero Manifest, which I like. 5 AM Club has been a great one. I like The One Thing, Gary Keller. That's been really influential book for me. I'm just going through here some of the books. Love your two books, Perfect Day and Perfect Week. You know what made a profound difference in my life has been The Miracle Equation. So. Hal Elrod, you know, he wrote the Miracle Morning, I believe, but it's really his second book I find that really is helpful. It's having that sort of that unwavering faith plus extraordinary effort you can generate your own miracles. And so it's like, how do you manifest a miracle, right? You just hope and pray that's going to happen, or can you manifest it? And so it's using those two concepts has been really, really cool. And let's see what else I really liked. You know, in our business, what helped explode our business, to be honest with you, has been Traction. Gina Wickman's book, EOS. Yeah. So we've implemented Traction in our company, and we've actually had a professional EOS implementer come by, and
that's really
great. that's been actually absolutely profound in just accelerating our company. We went from like 4 employees to 10. We went from a certain amount of revenue. We probably quadrupled it in like 18 months. And it's really having those systems in place, and thinking, like a almost like a franchise, or thinking like a almost like a Fortune 500 company, even though we're a lot smaller.
Amazing, amazing, amazing. So what's next for you? What are you super excited about going forward?
You know, what's next is I want to end the year strong. We're on point to hire, pick up a couple more acquisitions for our real estate company.
Yeah.
I'm really pumped at growing my coaching practice, and I love really helping shift these physicians or entrepreneurs or business folks into the next gear, from fourth to fifth gear essentially. And taking great people, make them extraordinary, and so I'm blowing that up. And then finally, I'm relaunching my clinic as a more of a virtual clinic, mm-hmm. and we're really taking people through that sort of the health transformational journey with biohacking and human optimization.
Absolutely amazing, absolutely amazing. So where should people hunt you down? I know you don't have a book yet, but do you have a podcast? Do you have a website that people can go, or what's the best social media for people to hit you up on?
Sure. VikramRaya.com is my first and last name. It's VikramRaya.com. Also, I'm on LinkedIn. So link with Vic.com. If you just type that into the URL, you can DM me on LinkedIn. So that's LINK with Vic, VIK.com.
Awesome, man. Well, I really, really appreciate you. And I appreciate you sharing the Perfect Week Formula was a big part of your life. So if everybody listening, if you want to grab a free copy of Perfect Week Formula like Vic did, then you can go to perfectweekformula.com. And then if you're serious about getting into the real estate investing game, I would actually listen to the first part of this podcast again, because it was so good. And then I would contact at the same time, simultaneously, hit Vic up on linkwithvic.com so that you connect with him on LinkedIn, and then also vikramrea.com. And do you have any other events coming up anytime soon?
We're just going to be launching our podcast shortly, but yeah, I'm excited and pumped. Yeah.
Super excited for that. Awesome, Vic. Yeah. I really, really appreciate you. I learned a ton. And I think the number one thing I'm going to do in addition to the real estate stuff is get out there and get my blood to a functional medicine doctor ASAP. So I appreciate you getting us wealthy and healthy and more energetic.
Awesome, man.